We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you fine folks on the other side of the speaker. Appreciate you tuning in. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate you lending an ear. This episode, of course, is brought to you by Prize Picks. And today we've got another special guest for you guys. The man who should be with you on a weekly basis, at the very least. He is supposed to be the co-host, and that is why I have passive-aggressively left his name on the masthead. But if it weren't for just corporate greed and poor leadership, you know, he'd be here. Again, always bitching in the lamest way possible is me. But I'm talking about none other than KP, Kyle Posey. How are you, bro?
Always bitching in the lamest way possible. Sounds like Twitter.com. I am wonderful.
It is, man. I am a product of my environment.
There we go. I'm good, man. How's life?
Life's great, man. I mean, you know what I'm going through. I got a 4-month son, you know, and that's been, I mean, overall just incredible. But
is time going by fast?
It does, man. Like, I don't know. There's like this whole other realm of baby time. Like, you know, like he has to feed like every 2 hours and then all of a sudden, bam, the 2 hours is gone. You're like, what? I don't know, man. It's weird.
It was weird. Monday, now it's Thursday, now it's Tuesday.
It is, dude. It is. I'm surprised I didn't miss the draft, to be honest.
Not yet.
What about you, dude? How's life?
Good, man. Just, you know, hanging with the child. Got spring ball going on right now. Been grinding prospects, trying to see, just so I can question Kyle Shanahan.
If you pass, are you coaching too?
Players. I am, yeah.
What are you coaching right now?
Safeties. It's actually pretty cool. So on our staff, there's this kid named Jet Archuleta.
And his dad, incredible name.
His dad is named Adam Archuleta. Not sure if you're familiar with him.
I have heard that name before.
One of the few white safeties to be very good in the NFL. So he's on our staff too. So I basically get to watch film and hang out with Adam Archuleta a couple times a week.
Just get to experience ball from the lens of somebody who's done it at the highest level is quite the privilege.
Yeah.
Will you learn any, like, what would you say if you summed up something very quickly? What would you say you learned from somebody that played football at that level?
He actually does a really good job of just like simplifying it to make sure the kids, hey, like we have to do it this way. We've never done it this way, but it worked for us at the NFL level. So it's probably going to work for you at the high school level. And like just small techniques where like we weren't doing it before. So that for sure stands out.
Does he get a lot of buy-in from everybody that knows where he played?
No, surprisingly, they kind of like roll their like. So it's strange because you know, this kids are entitled. So in their mind, you know, they know everything because, you know, at between the ages of 14 and 16, they've done it all. So even coming from like a guy who played at a very high level and played at a very high level very well, they're still not trying to hear it. So
yeah, being coachable is probably one of the most underrated and like fleeting qualities now. Like it really is becoming less and less common that a kid is. So if you are a young kid listening to this podcast, or you're a parent with a school age kid that's starting to play sports,
just listen.
Teach him to absorb knowledge, all of it. Like as he or she gets older, they will be able to discern the bullshit from the not bullshit. They need to hear it all in the beginning. Like teach them to be coachable, like, and eventually a good coach will latch on and things will start to click. But the lack of coachable kids is unbelievable in this day and age.
15 years from now, they're going to agree with us. So you might as well just do it now.
I know. I wish that there was some sort of time travel. I mean, whatever. Now we're really getting real too far. Anyways, just so you could say, look, man, you're going to agree with me eventually. You will look back on this. Just give me a chance here. Okay, so should we start the podcast out by making something up about Brandon Ayuk? I mean, I'm not sure what we could go with at this point, but
I heard the Bears are interested and the 49ers are going to trade up to number one.
Yeah, dude. I mean, why would Caleb don't need Caleb like Brandon Ayuk, man? If the 49ers had the number one pick, they would just trade back. Like they'd be like, we'll take all the first round picks we got rid of for Trey Lance and then we'll go back.
Yeah, it's wild. So we're a week away from the draft, and there's a good chance we probably haven't even heard the wildest Ayuk rumor yet. Like it's only heating up. It's pretty annoying. I can only imagine, you know, as his agent, as you know, one of the 49ers just scrolling social media, just like rolling their eyes on the things that pop up on
it. You can tell he really has had it. He's had it. The agent, Ayuk's agent, he's had it.
They're probably like sitting on a deal. So as they're sitting on like whatever the extension is, a new rumor from XXX on X.com. Hey, the 49ers are looking at, like, come on, man, again? Like, are we still doing this?
Honey, where Ayuk is and where his market is, and I could see them looking at like the Devontae Smith deal and be like, okay, add 5 to that, add 1.5 to that, and then we're good. And the 49ers are probably like, all right. and like, that's it. You know, I mean, I don't know. That Devontae Smith deal seemed like it was pretty close to what Brandon's going to get. But
I agree.
And I think that is money well spent because he's hella good. He's only getting better. You know, he just turned 26.
Yeah. Like he's young, man. Like those type of players with how he's played are exactly the kind you pay because his best football has not been played yet. Like this next contract will be his prime. Like this next contract, we will see the best version of Brandon Ayuk.
The whole contract.
Would you trade that person?
Right. Right. And I think it was Nick Wagner that said this on Guy Haberman's podcast. And I had already thought of it, but I didn't say it out loud. So he was talking about the dynamic of the 49. And we're about to talk draft receivers right now. So we're not off topic.
Segue.
Sometimes I can do them. He said, and I agreed with it. And I almost knew he was saying it as he was saying it, but like we're all talking about the possibility of Brandon Ayuk being traded. We're all talking about what he's going to get paid if the 49ers decide to pay him or somebody else pays him. But if you look at Brandon just next two, you really only look at needed in the next 2 years. And I think you actually said this as well in your ride. I want to say it might've been the AD Mitchell mock at one point. You've got Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, Juwan Jennings, wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. Of all of those three, Brandon Ayuk is the one with the highest percent chance to be here at the start of next season. The guy that's unsigned, trade rumors, the one who's causing all the ruckus right now is the one with the highest chance to be here when the 49ers play week one in 2025. So it's like, you know, it's to me, it's fun and all, but there's just very little reason for the 49ers to not pay Brandon Ayuk. I understand that they're up against the salary cap, all that stuff, but you got to understand, I think when a lot of people look at the salary cap, they think of like, they only think of pluses. Like, can they fit more into here? Not really taking into account the people that are leaving. Like, hate to Deebo Samuel, probably gone next season if you look at the way his contract is structured. Javon Hargrave.
I think you can drop the probably.
I know. Sorry. So anyways, but you're on as a guest and I'm just sitting here rambling. I'm assuming you agree on all the Ayuk stuff. You can spit on Brandon Ayuk right now if you'd like to, if you got anything you need to say.
He has a chance to be their best player on offense. They're probably not going to trade their best player on offense, especially as they're building around a quarterback who is also very young, who he has a strong rapport with, who he had a career year with. It's a lot. It's so simple. Like, in my mind, it could not be more simple. But it's the off season. There's not much to talk about. And I mean, you get on the internet, you can honestly be whoever you want to. So when you say, I'm hearing this, even if it couldn't be further from the truth, there's going to be a percentage of people who are like, wait, did you guys see this report? And then people run with it. It snowballs. And here we go. Just the logic of what we're hearing about Brandon just doesn't make sense, man.
No, it's been tough. And of course there could be the, you know, somebody there's a couple things that would keep the Brandon Ayuk thing from getting done. Is one, he's asking for insane money, you know, that the 49ers just can't quite make happen. Or somebody comes on and they're like, look, all right, we'll give you our first this year and our second next year. And, you know, like something the 49ers have to consider. But even then, like, to ship out, you're far and away your best wide receiver when your quarterback is on the cusp of kind of like moving himself into like top 10 conversation, you know, stuff like that. Like, you're like, well, this was all cool, but let's take a massive step back for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. It would have to be a deal where Ayuk was like, yeah, you have to do that. Like, Ayuk himself would be like, yes, let's pull the trigger.
Right. So anyways, receivers. You've taken a long, hard look at those available in the draft. And I want to preface this by saying, I don't care which receiver. I don't care if they traded up to pick number 3 and took Marvin Harrison Jr. I don't consider any possible selection of a receiver. Don't care about the type of receiver. Don't care who they resemble. I don't consider any possible selection of a receiver as like some sort of indictment of the Brandon Ayuk situation. Like we said, it would not surprise me in the slightest if both Deebo Samuel and Juwan Jennings, Juwan Jennings, no fault of his own. I think he might have a chance at a pretty sweet contract.
He was will a not be round pick,
right? It wouldn't surprise me if neither of them were on the team next offseason. So, with that being said, to me, as time has gone closer to the draft, receiver has become more and more prominent in my mind. You broke down the top 20 wide receivers recently for NinersNation.com, which I don't even think I mentioned when I introduced you. That's my bad. But talk to me.
So first, why are they going to draft a receiver? For everything we've talked about, not number 11, but there's a good chance, like Juwan Jennings, even if he plays out this current restricted 1 year, right? Do they sign him? Like, what would you sign him to? Is that worth it? Or do you just flip him? He walks, signs a deal. You get a comp pick. You draft another receiver late in day 3, whatever it may be. And then Deebo, who 2019, 11 games, 2020, 6 games, 2021, 15 games, 2022, 13 games, last year, 15. Like, he has not played a full season. You're probably not going to extend somebody who hasn't played a full season. So, like, that is why the likelihood of them drafting a receiver or two is very high. There are a lot of good receivers in this draft, like an embarrassing amount of talent. Obviously, like you said, at the top, Marvin Harris, like there's 3 who are just out of the 49ers range, even if they're thinking about trading up, like Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, like they're all probably going top 12. Like, as we've seen before, like Trey Lance, obviously that's an extreme example, but there are players, if Kyle Shanahan wants somebody, he can go get them. So like the next cluster, whether it's, you know, Brian Thomas from LSU, Adonai Mitchell from Texas, Ladd McConkey's another one, Keon Coleman, like there's another cluster who could go anywhere from 15 to 42. So like the 49ers will have their pick of the litter for like that next group of wide receivers, because it is assumed that there is a gap between that first three bunch. But I am head over heels in love with Adonai Mitchell. Not everybody is, and I understand why.
Tell me why you are.
So we are talking about a 6'2 receiver who runs a 4.3. Good start. So aside from like the physical tools, which are very, very good, like, you know, it is difficult to track the ball when somebody is draped all over you. I think his ability to play the ball in the air and quote unquote moss people is worth a lot more than people are giving him credit for. So like when I'm watching him, aside from that, when I'm watching him, people are absolutely terrified of his speed. Like they want nothing to do with getting in his face, you know, just basically like sitting on his routes. So in that sense, all these slants, curls, outs, like these underneath routes, easy pitch and catch. Like he's going to be able to steal yards in the NFL because of his speed. And I also think he is far more refined than people give him credit for. So like that, honestly, there aren't many weaknesses to his game. I see people say, look, he's taking this playoff. Well, it's an RPO and the quarterback's not looking his way, or the cornerback's rolled up. He has a safety over top. So he's trying to figure out, hey, like, where do I sit down? There are so many nuances to the play that people are pointing out where it's just like, come on, like, that's not even true. It's lazy, if anything. So and I don't want to make it sound like I'm making excuses for him. Like, I'm not going to pretend like he doesn't have flaws, but like, I think he's better than Neighbors. I think he's better than Odunze. I think he has a chance to be the best receiver. I think that he has a very, very high ceiling, and he is a player that I would trade up for. He is a player that I don't think there are, like, to me, like when I stack the best players in this class, he's in the top 10. So like if I were to move up for a receiver, if I was worried that I would miss out on Mitchell, I would have no problem, you know, moving, well, maybe it's next year's third round, maybe like day three picks this year to go up and get Mitchell. That way I don't miss out on this type of prospect, because I really do think he is that special. And I think at the next level, he's going to be even better. People always question his lack of production. If you watch Texas's quarterback, he is so bad. He is so indecisive, so inaccurate that I seriously don't understand how that's not the talking point. Cause I mean, it's a popular program. It's not like we're talking about Texas State. Like these are the Longhorns. Like they're always on TV. People have watched their quarterback, but pairing him with Brandon Ayuk, we're talking about a special duo. And that's another reason why, like, I want to give Brock Purdy weapons. I want him to succeed. I want Ayuk to not have to worry about being doubled and getting frustrated and being taken out of the game. So I know if I have an offense where it's Kittle, McCaffrey, and now I have Mitchell and Ayuk on the outside, what we saw last year, next 4 years, like they're going to be able to drop 4 touchdowns a game. And like, that's like, I don't, the floor seems like obnoxious to say, but over a 16, 17 game sample size, it didn't seem like that. So I really, really think he could do well, and especially in Kyle Shanahan's offense where you're just running crossers, right? You're like, you're running away from people. A 4.3 guy is probably going to be able to do that. And at his size, like he play in those quote unquote condensed splits, and he can block and he tries and he's competitive and he's physical. And again, like he can jump out of the gym. He has clips. Like there are clips of him where he's jumping and he's just like floating in the air. And you're like, you're waiting for him to come down, and he still hasn't come down yet, and he's still jumping over the guy. There are other times where, like, when I go back to people talking about him taking plays off, if you just press pause on the play, he is ahead of or at the same level as the receiver on the other side who ran a 4-2-1. So there is so much to like about this player where if there's a receiver to take in the first round, it's him.
You know, it's interesting that you're talking about him too, because I just had Matt Barrows on last episode, and his, you know, he does his yearly draft crush, and his draft crush this year was A.D. Mitchell. And so I knew that, and I got on and watched him, and I was pretty impressed, dude. He's a pretty good route runner, and I was very surprised at how often he created like 3 or 4 yards of separation from his guy, you know. And like you said, a lot of that comes from the way they play him. You know, he's the way a lot of college DBs played him. He almost had a free slant every play if he wanted it, because they just would not come up to within like 5 yards half the time. And when they did, that's when you got a highlight of him beating him deep and stuff. So it was, and there's that one clip where I don't know what they do on the one play, but you can see him turning around and yelling at the coaching staff saying, get me the ball. And then they're on like the 5-yard line. And then the very next clip is when he goes, jumps up, and Moss is the dude, but does what you're saying, where you could tell he even jumped too early, but he's like floating in the air. And then his arms just go whack and like some type of chameleon, you know, and he just snatches the ball out of the air. So, I mean, with me, here's, and to circle this back to the 49ers, and you could say this about any receiver that you've got on your list, almost any receiver. I mean, you could go all the way up to that shows you how deep and talented this receiver class is, because I'm at, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, there's 6, there's 11. Probably I can get all the way through 11 and see all of them as an option at 31, you know, like not obviously not the ones that'll never reach 31.
I'm at
Xavier Worthy at 11. Could see, you know, you could make a case for him at 31. Ladd McConkley, absolutely. Troy Franklin, absolutely. Jalen Polk, absolutely. Brian Thomas, you know, obviously I just keep saying the same thing over and over. But the 49ers right now, they have Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, Juwan Jennings, and then crickets. You know, like you just, I'm not trying to offend anybody here, but you've got Trent Taylor, who in 2017 was fucking awesome, but that's
2017.
It is 2024 now. So I'm glad he's back on the team, though. That's some cool nostalgia. Danny Gray hasn't really shown anything. Ronnie Bell, probably not that guy. So it's, to me, it's,
if Ronnie Bell was that guy, they wouldn't have signed Trent Taylor to be the returner, because that was Bell's role.
Right. And he lost it. Chris Conley, appreciate the contributions. Dude decided to be a major show up on special teams. He has a place on the team, but like the 49ers, their receiving core in 2024 is going to be awesome. But in 2025, you've got like a massive, like $16 or $17 million swing on Deebo Samuel's contract with a post June 1 release. Juwan Jennings, if he has a year like last year, there's going to be probably several teams out there willing to give him at least $10 million a year. Like,
not an option.
And that for the 49ers, not an option. So I know that I understand that a lot of people have not necessarily entertained receiver as like a serious option for 31. One, the head coach of the 49ers is Kyle Shanahan. And what school did he go to?
Tejas. Hook him.
You've got a dude that runs a 4-2 that went to Texas, and you got the guy that KP was just gushing over. Like,
and he was supposedly Kyle was in the building a lot with Texas, which makes sense. Like, I guess he's buddies with Sark. So like, he knows this program, and that's his alma mater. He should know the program, right? So like, if he does fall for Mitchell and they do move up for him, like, it's because he knows everything about him. I don't know if you saw the report about, we talked about a little bit before this, supposedly, like, and this could be just people pushing him down the boards, but his blood sugar, like his diabetes, it's so right to just think about. But it's also a week before the draft, and people could just be making stuff up, but like, Shanahan should know everything about him. So if they do end up getting him, it's for good reason.
Right. And I just have no problem with with making sure that Brock Purdy has suitable weapons for, I mean, just thinking about it, whether you want to think about it in terms of A.D. Mitchell or Javon Baker or Keon Coleman or Brian, you know, the names I said earlier, Brandon Ayuk plus that guy, plus everybody that everything the 49ers offense already has going for it. The downside of a receiver right now is how many snaps is that receiver going to get as a rookie? Not that that's necessarily the goal. Like, we're talking when this expected exodus happens next offseason. And maybe there's a world where it doesn't happen, but if you are on team, get a player that is going to contribute massively right now, maybe receiver is not the highest on the list. But at the same time, at 31, what position is going to be? Like, if we want to – do you want to talk about any other receivers?
Well, we spent a lot of time on
that. Okay, well, I know, but what any of these receivers that are the ones that I mentioned, the ones that you could see going at 31 that you kind of like wouldn't be that pumped about?
I'm not sure who else would fall from that cluster. So you have to be a certain size to play in this offense, right? Because he is asking a lot from you in the run game. Like, you have to be able to block. We know that, right? Like, this is Kyle Shanahan, and you are going to block or else you are not going to play. Maybe that's part of the reason why Danny Gray has struggled to get on the field outside of the obvious health issues just staying on the field. But a guy like Troy Franklin, he's 176 pounds. Like, you're probably not going to be able to trust him in between the hashes. Maybe even like McConkey, who is mostly like a slot receiver, but are you going to take a slot receiver in the first round who weighs 186 pounds when, like, if you're playing in condensed formations and he has to go up against whoever it may be, a linebacker, like, are you going to trust him to be able to block a linebacker for a split second? Probably not. Where, like, guys like Mitchell, guys like Keon Coleman's 213 pounds, like Thomas is over 200 pounds. Like, these guys should be able to hold up against the run. One guy that I am like obnoxiously high on is Javon Baker. And that would be the second receiver, right? That would be the guy who they take maybe with their third round pick, or maybe even like in the fourth round if he falls. He is over 200 pounds. He's a contested catch freak. He is also a former Alabama receiver. Why he transferred, I have no idea, but he
brought him in for a top 30 visit as well,
which matters. And I do think that is a big deal. So I like him a lot. I'm pretty high on him. Another receiver who I could see them being interested in, and he's like right around that same, like 6'1", 197 pounds, is Jalen McMillan. So Washington just, they had everybody. Like, they were loaded at wide receiver. And he's a guy who I could just see winning at the NFL level, right? I could see him knowing how to get open. He does play fast, and he tries as a blocker, which matters, man. So he's shifty. He ran a 4.47. And he can get open and he can catch. So, like, the most simplest things, I could see him being like that third, fourth round receiver that maybe he's the Juwan Jennings replacement.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are a ton of names to like throughout the first like four rounds. I mean, even, you know, Brendan Rice, he's probably going to be a late day two guy. He's got a lot of qualities that I like, you know, and none of which involve his name. Luke McCaffrey, you know, a guy who his brother's on the team. He's got some quality, 6'2", 195 pounds. And if I guarantee you, just based on the family pedigree, the work ethic's never going to be a problem with that dude. Like, there's just a lot of receivers to like here. I mean, it wouldn't even surprise me if the 49ers drafted two of them. You know, it's just, I think that the cupboard's pretty bare, and that's the 49. I mean, they've drafted three very, you know, very quality starters, but after that, they've kind of struggled a little bit. So, wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if they took a wide receiver at 31. Here's a question for you that I've just been wanting to ask somebody. I guess it depends on who's on the board, but would you rather have the picks that the 49ers have right now, or would you rather have no first rounder, an early second, a late second, an early third, and a late third?
Oh, man.
like basically simulating a trade back from one to early two and getting a third in the exchange. It's just the 49ers are in a weird spot at 31, and there's like this weird bubble of talent, second round talent too, if you know, like that I'm starting to pick up on. I don't know. It would have to be a who's on the board thing. What do you think?
So I really want that fifth year option, right? For maybe a guy like Mitchell, maybe for one of the tackles, if they do fall, I want that fifth year control of a player. So my lean would be no, but it would be tough to turn down knowing that I could get perhaps two starters instead of one, maybe three starters instead of one. If you know, I really do hit on these picks. So I get the argument. I get where you're coming from, but man, like I think there's a lot of value in that fifth year where, like, look at what we're doing with Ayuk right now.
Right. No, I get it. It's just I have all kinds of draft thoughts. But right after we get a quick word in from Prize Picks, we're going to talk offensive tackles. We're going to talk defensive linemen / ed rushers. And we are just going to keep spitting our shish on NFL draft prospects that we like and don't like. But like I said, first got to get a quick word in for Prize Picks. Striking Gold is re-upping Prize Picks for 2024. It's daily fantasy sports made easy. It's just you against the numbers. There's no pros. There's no sharks. You're not picking more. You know, you're picking more. You're picking less. 2 to 6 players, and you're watching the winnings roll in. You guys have heard me rattle on and on about Prize Picks. It really added a very, very cool dynamic this season that I liked a lot. So I think you guys should get up on it as well. The website's super easy to use. Everything is so simple. You can make your picks and submit an entry in less than a minute, and I really mean that. So what you want to do is go to prizepicks.com/gold and use the promo code GOLD for a first deposit match of up to $100. Again, that's prizepicks.com/gold, and you're going to use the promo code GOLD. That tells them that you came from the Striking Gold podcast. It's daily fantasy sports made easy. Be a part of it. You're going to be hearing about it all season long, so get on it. All right, KP, we touched on receivers. I mean, if I had to get a quick word in, I like Ladd McConkley a lot. I like Jalen Polk a lot. I think Xavier Worthy might be some sort of a weird dark horse for the 49ers. He's not all speed. You know, there's so many receivers that come along that speed is almost like a gimmick. Like it's the only thing that somebody likes about them. I wouldn't necessarily put Xavier Worthy into that category. And Kyle Shanahan getting a dude that runs a 4.2 in space is kind of fun to think about. Xavier Worthy has a pretty good spatial awareness, if you will. Like he's very aware of how to use his speed to break free of a defender, like in a phone booth. Like he'll just do these real small steps that I like watching. Romo Odunze, I think it's just a fun name to say. I wanted to say that. Not 49ers have no chance in hell. It's just a super cool name, and he deserves to be a top 10 pick just based on his name. I thought the same thing you thought about Troy Franklin. Just would he have like the physicality that the 49ers kind of obvious? Like, look at their three receivers. Like every single one of them takes pride in hitting people. One of them sent a defender into a Gatorade bench. So yeah. Okay. We hit on receivers, offensive tackles. What are your thoughts?
Whew, a lot to like too. I honestly think the tackles and like the interior class are better, is a better group than the wide receiver class. So again, like there are like the Joels, Olu, Fashanu, JC Latham, like not an option, not going to happen. There will be a need, or there will have to be a positional run on maybe another position. Like if the 49ers are thinking about getting one of these other guys, and that, I guess that goes for, you know, essentially any position that we're talking about. I really like the BYU tackle, Kingsley. I'm not sure how to say it. Sumathawai.
You sound like you're doing one of those battle cry things they do.
I don't think I've heard his name said out loud. I like him quite a bit. I actually like him more than guys who are actually projected to go in the first round, other than so I have him above Tyler Guyton. I have him above
I think Jordan it's Morgan. Suamatea.
Suamatea. That makes sense.
Something like that.
So I like him. I mean, when in doubt, just roll with a five-star recruit who's young and still developing. Later on in the draft, maybe like a Patrick Paul, who's just a mammoth 6'8", just very incredibly strong. I saw them work with Roger Rosengarten, who to me probably needed another year. But if you plan on like maybe quote unquote redshirting him and like that's your second round pick, I understand that. So like there are a lot of players at tackle who could start right away, because think about it, like they started Colton McKivitz, and a lot of these guys would be drafted ahead of Colton McKivitz. Like if they
don't just go in there and beat out Colton McKivitz, bro. say no Cassius Marsh.
Like all these, a lot of these guys are super athletes, were very strong, they move well, they just seem like in Kyle Shanahan's offense, you would be able to quote unquote get by with them early on as they continue to develop, as they figure out what they can and can't get away with at the NFL level. Like, are there going to be issues? Yeah. There's going to be issues with McKivitz too still. So like, let's not act like that wouldn't be a problem. So like I said, Kingsley, maybe Amarius Mims falls from Georgia. I don't think so. Guys who move like that, who are built like that, who just like when they put their hands on you, you go flying in the opposite direction, don't tend to last long. So it's tough. I think they're going to have to, like, based on how I'm assuming the board falls, I would imagine tackle isn't the first round pick, because I think there will be a run and most of these players will go before maybe 25. So like before the 49ers could even think about moving up. So unless they like really hone in on one of these players, I think we're looking at like a day two tackle. So with like the second or third round pick.
That's kind of, and it really starts with the tackles for me, is kind of when I started to consider receiver more seriously. And trust me, and everybody that's listening to this podcast knows how much I've talked about the fact that the 49ers offensive line is kind of in the same situation as receivers, in the fact that you got a left tackle who's probably the best offensive lineman that's ever played, but he might play another year, another 2 years. Like, I don't even want to mention three. I'm not quite sure about that. Left tackle Aaron Banks is in a contract year. Center Jake Brendel, you know, he's acceptable, but easily upgraded on. Right guard, John Feliciano, probably surprised a lot of people, surprised me last year, but again, just a 1 year deal. Looks like from what I saw on Over the Cap, just a little bit more than vet minimum. Right tackle Colton McKivitz, again, they gave him a little contract to keep him around for another 2 years, but easily upgraded on. So the offensive line is in just as much flux and in need of like the future than receivers are. But to me, where things start to lean towards receiver for me is the quality of player that you will get at 31 seems a little higher at receiver. You know, like there are some tackles that people mock to the 49ers at 31 that might, that will probably be starters, could be a starter, but are they an upgrade? You're never really sure. But whereas the receivers, I'm like, this guy would be a starter. Like, you know what I mean? It's
the second he's drafted.
Right. And he might be like fourth on the depth chart. And I understand that he might only get, you know, like maybe he only gets 20 catches this year or whatever. I don't know, but or maybe more, whatever. There's a much clearer path. It's like the prospects aligned with the pick. If the first round goes how I think it's going to go, the tackle that the 49ers would select at 31 might be an upgrade. You know, there's a good chance it is. It might be. Whereas the receiver I could see them picking at 31 would be a bona fide starter no later than one season from now and might be the second best receiver on the team as a rookie. Like, there's conversations to be had there. So it's so to like me, it's
the two tackles who are quote unquote mocked to go to the 49ers are Tyler Guyton and Jordan Morgan. Like, I don't think Tyler Guyton knows what he's doing. So are they going to gravitate towards somebody who is so, like, I don't want to say inexperienced and raw, but like, that's what he looks like. He looks like he's just kind of confused. Like, he's a great athlete, but at the NFL level, when you're seeing so much, so many different looks, and you're going against the best of the best, just pass for me. And then Jordan Morgan, who is Arizona, I think he's a fifth year senior. He makes mistakes that freshmen make. So if he's making those kind of mistakes, and like, his ceiling is like, we can assume that it's probably tapped out because this is who he is. He's not going to get any better. So like, when you're making those kind of mistakes, just, I don't know why they would be interested in those two players. So I would be very surprised if they go in Guyton or Morgan's direction, which brings us back to receiver and exactly what you're saying. Like, the players who you can make an argument, like we just went through, you can make an argument that four or five receivers would be able to help them right away and then be starters in 2025, 2026, 2027.
Like, the type of starter that you, like, unquestioned starters, like, you're excited
seven
about.
Seven targets, like, a game starter.
Right. And whereas with offensive tackles, and again, I understand the need is there. You guys know this. If you're listening to me, you know I've talked about it. But it's like, are you getting an upgrade, or are you just getting somebody that might be able to beat out Colton McKivitz this year? Might not. Is it a player worth select? You know, I just think the 49ers really need this player to be like a contributor, not necessarily immediately, but the path to them contributing and their place on the offense or defense needs to be clear. And that's why I've almost, like, it's this weird, like wide receiver, 34% offense. Like, my, what am I trying to say here? Like, kind of like the attention I think the 49ers should pay to it. I'm almost equally divided between receiver, offensive line, and like either a defensive end type or a pass rusher type, because you could just like never have enough of those. So,
how much of, and this, it was a while ago, obviously, how much of Mike McGlinchey performing the way he did at a premium position would scare them off of taking another right tackle or taking another tackle in the first round, as opposed to the other wide receiver who they took in the first round, who we talked about, who's probably going to make a lot, 25 plus million per season? Like, how much would that be in the back of their minds as they're weighing, hey, do we wait and take a lineman? And by the way, which we haven't mentioned, I don't know if you know this, Rob, not every starter in the NFL was drafted in the first round.
Right. It's true. So yeah, the fact, you know, I don't want to act like 31, it's impossible to find a starter. Like, the dude from the Eagles was like a seventh rounder or something. Like, what's his name? They just gave him a new contract. Their offensive lineman, can't remember his name. He's like a Hawaiian or Samoan dude.
Jordan Matiala?
Something like that. Mayata.
Yep.
Okay. And yeah. So
that's great to say, because like, people always look, well, Jason Kelce, like, it doesn't have to be an outlier either.
Right. And so I think what you just brought up is a great point. Like, and kind of what I'm trying to illustrate is, look at Mike McGlinchey was selected 10th overall. Brandon Ayuk was selected, what, like 26th? 24th?
Yeah, to move up a couple.
Yeah, so mid-20s. I should know that. But, you know, and that's kind of, I feel the same relationship with. In even more so because – again, Mike McGlinchey was selected 10th overall, or was it 9th overall, and the Raiders had 10. Don't care. And yeah, because they had that weird coin flip with the Raiders that was like televised and shit. That was funny. So not that Mike McGlinchey didn't work out in his own way. He got a huge contract, but obviously didn't. The 49ers didn't feel any need to keep him. And so that's, and now you're talking about, you're not talking about pick 9 or 10. You're talking about pick 31 in relation to offensive tackles. So if that is any sort of an indicator on the talent drop off, then maybe, you know, maybe offense, maybe it's easy to talk yourself into a different position other than an offensive tackle. But again, the 49ers offensive line is at a place where if they went tackle, and if shit, if they went guard, then with the next pick, I would be like, that makes sense. Like, I have no qualms with taking that, but I think there's a case to be made with receivers. And I think there's a case to be made with like pass rushers or, I mean, any measure of defensive lineman, because something I've said, I'll get your thoughts on it right now, is how confident are you in the 49ers' current defensive line?
There's going to be a drop off. Like, we should acknowledge that, right? I don't know what Leonard Floyd is going to give them. Obviously, he's been productive everywhere he's been, but it's not the same kind of production like when Charles Omenihu was with the 49ers. Because when I see Floyd, like, it's more of cleanup, if that makes sense. Which, again, like, when you're playing opposite of Nick Bosa, you're going to get a lot of cleanup opportunities. So maybe, like, that's what they're counting on. They just need somebody who's competent, somebody who plays a lot, which check and check. And just to be on the field and aware of his surroundings. You have Bosa. You have Hargrave. I do think Malik Collins is going to be better. I have no idea what to do with Gross Matos. In my mind, they're hoping that he kind of takes another step. And they're giving, I'm assuming, I'm projecting here, they're giving a lot of these guys the Chris Kocurek bump, which why wouldn't you? So it's more of a sum of parts plus Nick Bosa, if that makes sense. And I don't hate the idea. I also understand that, like, with, you have to look at the draft class in general, right? So, like, when you're looking at the guys who are on the edge, like, who is really going to be able to come in and start and be productive right away, which is why you go out and you pay Floyd, which is why you go out and you give Gross Matos the contract that they did, because, like, those two are probably going to be better than whoever you take in the second, in the third round. So maybe they try to get somebody later on and try to develop him. But I think there is going to be a drop off, but at the same time, they're going to be so good on offense that I don't think it matters.
We just heard today that they brought Chris Braswell in for a workout, the pass rusher from Alabama.
Oh, that's good.
They've talked to Chris Jenkins out of Michigan. There's a couple more in there that I'm leaving out. I like Darius Robinson quite a bit. They've talked to Brandon Dorlus. I'm kind of scrolling through it right now. Michael Hall Jr., they had a top 30 visit with him. So they're definitely putting – now, the one thing I probably should mention to you, and I may try and do it on my own early next week or something, but the 49ers, like, their top 30 visits, like, they draft those players. Like, about, like, two-thirds to three-fourths of the players that they drafted over the last, like, 3 years have – all gotten top 30 visits.
Yeah, they're not wasting time. There's no doubt about that. I've seen that. Just like typing in my browser, like the names, it comes up with like, this person was a prospect visit. Oh, he's on the team. So
right.
You're correct about that. And that is something we should definitely pay attention to. Not specifically first rounders, but once you get to like the second and third round, you can kind of start to narrow it down.
Yeah, you can. And you can. And one thing I wanted to do was, and I'll do it at some point, is I'm going to, at some point next week, it's obviously like I'm running out of time here, but I wanted to do a mock draft with just players from the top 30 visits and like based on where they're projected to go. And, you know, there's a ton of names that we've already talked about on here that could very easily, again, there's only a couple that, you know, Marshawn Neyland out of Western Michigan, not a huge fan of him, but
I could see why they like him.
Yeah, he's kind of like tenacious. Yeah, exactly. He's tenacious. Like, there's not a whole lot of productivity there, which is kind of like scares me nowadays. You know, like I'm kind of like, be good at football. I don't want to project you being good at football. I just want you to already be good at football type of thing.
I think like 75% of his sacks came against a terrible team.
I know, and he's playing in the MAC. And you know, he played some good teams. But, it's,
but Khalil like, Mack played in the MAC.
I know, dude. I know. That means he's him for sure. So they're doing their homework against defensive linemen. So like I said, Brandon Dorlus is on here. Evan Anderson is on here. Michael Hall Jr. is on here. Chris Braswell
Jr. on here. Very interesting name, by the way. He is a freak athlete. He has a crazy first step. He could be a guy. I think he's like 20 years old or something crazy like that. He's very young. Part-time player, didn't play a lot, but as far as like pass rush upside goes, him and Hargrave with Bosa and Floyd, like whoever the hell, it doesn't matter.
When I watched Michael Hall Jr., that's exactly what I saw was Javon Hargrave.
Yeah, like he's just going to beat you off the snap.
Right, and I thought, let me look it up right now. I thought, and again, kind of like trusting that everybody trusts me, is when I went to his NFL scouting profile. No, they don't have the comparison on here. I could have sworn I saw somebody compare him to Javon Hargrave, and that's exactly what I saw when I watched him. He's not much more of a pass rush guy than a run stopping guy, but again, do people like, is the NFL, is the day of like the big ass 330 pound run stopper, like, do those players still have a place?
So that's where like Jordan Elliott comes into play, right? Like, you pay him a little bit to play 20 to 30% of the time to buy time for Hall, for the guys like Hall.
Right. So it's just, I'll say this. They were definitely much more prominent like 10 years ago in the NFL, 10, 15 years ago. The big ass dudes that would just, the 1-0-1s that were just right in the middle of the defensive line. And you would just take solace knowing you're like, okay, no one's going to move him out of the way. Now we'll just see what we can do around him. And it, you just don't really see those guys as much anymore. What was the dude, man? Oh, was it Brandon Williams? Oh, played for the Ravens for a while.
Oh yeah.
That dude was huge. I don't know. I don't want the congressman. I want Brandon Williams, the NFL player. Yeah, there we go.
So on mock draftable, 93% of Michael Hall is K1 short.
Okay. Okay. I can see that. I can see that. Yeah. So, okay. So I searched him up. Brandon Williams. I don't think he plays anymore. I don't know if he's still in the league. 6'1", 336 pounds.
Wow, what a man. That's a man's man right there.
That dude was round. Okay. So how do you feel about, is there anybody in the pass rusher class that stood out to you? Anybody that you like? It could even be an interior guy. Like, do you think the 49ers could go with another defensive lineman? Like, what if they get the 31 and Johnny Newton's sitting there?
Man, so he's a very good player. Would not fault them for taking a guy like Newton. I don't think he's going to fall there.
I wouldn't think so.
Again, like, Byron Murphy's a really good player too. After that,
I don't think he gets there anywhere near there either.
So they met with Mason Smith, who's a former 5-star. From LSU. I think he tore his ACL. He was on schedule to be a very good player, but then he tore his knee up and then he wasn't the same afterwards. So perhaps they bet on a guy a year removed, because that's when you gain your athleticism back, to kind of bounce back. But his teammate, Mekhi Wingo, is also pretty intriguing. He's small, 6 feet. So maybe that'll scare teams off and cause him to fall.
But low man wings.
Like, there you go. he was very productive. So I can see them taking a flyer on him in day three. That would be my answer. Would be Mekhi Wingo later on in the draft, which again, like, we're talking like, I don't want to say Kevin Givens type, but just to give like the listeners an idea of like the kind of player I'm talking about, where he's just pass rush specialist, right? Come in on obvious passing downs, push the pocket, create chaos in the backfield, and force the quarterback to run into 97.
Yeah, and you wish he wouldn't have imploded on himself, but Tavondre Sweat was probably, man, that guy is probably supposed to go like 2 or 3 rounds higher than he's going to go. The 49ers would not be interested in, based on his off-the-field stuff and from what I've read about his personality and stuff, but that dude's a beast too. But I don't think they'll do it anymore, dude. I don't think it wouldn't surprise me at all if they took Brandon Dorless in the second. Kind of a
DUI 2 weeks before the draft, man.
What, Tavondre Sweat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, man. And even then, like, I thought I'd heard stuff even before that happened talking about that he's kind of like not the guy you want, like,
yeah,
personality wise. Obviously, when he's on a field, he's good. Chris Jenkins, he seems like, out of Michigan, I like him a lot, but I think he's going to be in that weird, he'll go early second before the 49ers really come back around. You know who somebody I just can't get into? You have you watched any of Chop Robinson?
I have, yeah. He's very fast but also very small.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, and I don't want to just completely plant my flag on, if you don't produce in college, you can't produce in the NFL, because that's not always the case, but it's like everything you read about him is, he's really fast. I know he didn't produce, but he's really fast. And I'm like, fuck it. And I told, who did I say to this to? Was it, I can't remember who I said it to. Was it Barrows? But I was talking about that scene in Moneyball where he's like, he'll be a good hitter. And he's like, he wasn't a good hitter in the minors. He's going to be a good hitter when we put him up against big league arbs.
You love Moneyball.
Whenever anybody talks about, like, that's kind of where I reeled back a little bit when it came to Amarius Mims. It's like, you know, like, yeah, I get that he's a freak and he's huge and he's massive, but it's like, I don't know, man. Are the 49ers in a position to take risks?
So Chop Robinson played in played the entire season and had just 12 tackles. Like I'm on ESPN.com. 12 solo tackles is what his 2023 season stats were. That would be a hard sell. Like that would be tough to sell in a draft room.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you're just looking at him going like, dude, I mean, he's so fast. His traits are crazy. And I'm like, he had those same traits in college. And his player comp is Micah Parsons. Is it Micah or Micah? I always mess it up. It's Micah. Okay. And I've got a Micah in there. Right. And I'm like, I'm just like, where is it? If he is that, then why isn't he that? Like all over the tape.
Undersized in a, like obnoxiously undersized. So 6'2" and a half, 22nd percentile, 254 pounds, 27th percentile. In the NFL, if you don't have like long arms or a wingspan, like these tackles are going to eat you alive. His wingspan is in the 5th percentile. His arm length is in the 12th percentile. So you're basically betting on him running around the corner every time. Because if they get his hands on him, what's going to happen?
It's like another movie quote, Longest Yard, where he's like, he's fast. He's really fast. He makes fast people look not fast. And so, you know, I think where I'm at with the 49ers, just to kind of not wrap everything up, but like, when you tuck yourself up against the salary cap like the 49ers have, the pressure will never be higher to hit on your draft picks because it's cheap, quality football players. And that's why whenever I'm talking about offensive tackles in the late first versus wide receivers in the late first, the 49ers are now moving forward for the foreseeable future. They're in the business of absolutely nailing their draft picks, which they've done at a good rate. To be honest, if you look at how often NFL draft picks succeed, if you're batting in the 300s, you're doing pretty damn well. And the 49ers have done that, and they've drafted stars probably better than anybody else. But they just, like, you know, like with all these prospects, they have got to be at least the day one and day two guys, and 49ers like to find day three guys that can do it too. Like, they have to be contributors, and they have to work out. And that's why I've been such a stooge when in regards to like productivity and seeing it on the tape. Is like, I don't know if the 49ers have the luxury of projecting as much as they typically would. I mean, what do you think, man?
Whew. So I 100% agree on just the stars, right? Because it seems like every year we're talking about a max extension for a player. So maybe they afforded themselves a little a longer leash here. I don't know, because like it seems like the best part about it is they go into every draft and it seems like they have a plan and they stick to a plan. So does it always work? Of course not. That's not real life for every, like, you go into every year, we're going to nail it 100% of the time. I don't know how to answer your question, like, to be brutally honest.
It's not even really a question, man. It's like, what is your outlook on this draft class? Is there anything that you've just got like that nags at you every time you look at a prospect, or some of the, like, one of the things we talked about going into this podcast was guys you don't like. Like, is there a theme with the guys you don't like, or is it kind of just, you know what I mean? It's like
I would flip the script and say I would load up on the strengths of this class, which is wide receiver, tackle, and interior line. And knowing we talked about Jennings and Debo, we talked about Brindle, right guard, and right tackle. So I would come away, and that's why, like, in the mock draft simulator today, I'm coming away with two receivers. I'm coming away with a center, a right guard, and a tackle. And I'm looking to build around my quarterback, who was 24 and who's probably going to be around for a long time. I'm under that impression anyway, until I see otherwise. So with that in mind, I'm going to build on the strength. I'm not going to draft an edge rusher just because I think I need an edge rusher. I'm not going to take a defensive tackle just because I think I need a defensive tackle. The point of bringing in Isaac Yiadom and Rocky Sin was because I know the cornerback class, not that great and not going to probably have a guy who can come in and play right away. So with that in mind, I'm looking to 2025 when guys like Spencer Burford, guys like Colton McKivitz, guys like Jake Brindle aren't going to be around, or I can make it to where they're not around based on their contracts. So that's why I'm going to plant the seeds now with maybe it's, I could go just name random names. I really like Tanner Bordellini, which incredible name, by the way, Wisconsin center. I would try to get him on day three. And like looking at the list, there are so many interior offensive linemen that they could pluck. And again, they don't have to play this year, but they could start next year. And the same with the tackles. Like they can draft a guy like Blake Fisher out of Notre Dame in the third round or in the fourth round. And even if he doesn't beat out McKivitz this year, he could use all the practice reps. Think about who he's going against in practice and then be ready to roll come next year. So like that's what I would do. And I know you asked, like, is there a theme about the bad? I would focus on the strength and the good and just draft those players, right? Draft where the strength is and build on my strength, which is obviously the offense.
And I think that's a great point. And I think that, you know, just if I think the way I kind of summarized it in my head as you're talking about this and leaning into the strength is the best way I can summarize it. And if I could like create like some title of this draft season for the 49ers is draft players that have a crystal clear path towards a starting role.
Yes.
You know, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to work out. Obviously, you have to earn your place on the field. But if you're drafting a receiver at 31, there is a crystal clear path to when he becomes a starter. And then anything he contributes in year one is exciting. If you're drafting any position on the offensive line.
The offensive line. Yeah, just say
there is a clear path towards that player becoming a starter. And then you're hoping that your coaches and your scouting department did their job and that player develops into a quality player.
By the way, you know, Chris Forster, hell of an offensive line coach. So get him some actual talent instead of like these fourth and fifth round guys.
Right. I mean, if the 49ers went like Kingsley Sumatea in with their first round pick, and then, you know, like I said, they could do receiver. But if they went back to receiver in the second round and got like one of the guys like Javon Baker, might be a little early for him, but you know, I'm not really so concerned about that, but I just feel like, of course, that's what every team's goal is to draft somebody who's going to start. But I feel like with the 49ers and the way their position groups are laid out, shit, we haven't even talked about linebacker, but you could draft a linebacker at some point in day two or three that would have a pretty clear path at a starting role, you know, and have some confidence in your scouting department to draft the guys that they think they are. And then, you know, there's just quite a few ways that the 49ers could go about this draft class where their first three, four, maybe even five picks all have like a one-way track to like a starting role in 2025. It's just, you know, maybe I'm making it seem easier than it is, but does that make sense?
That's true because it can't be about this year, right? It has to be about your future. You have to build your foundation of your roster. And to do that, you have to think ahead. The best organizations, they're not waiting until position X is a need because that person's a free agent. Now you pigeonhole yourself going into the draft, and now you have to take that player. That's not what it's about. That's not what, like, the Ravens do. They're always a year ahead. So I think the 49ers this year especially because, like, they already have a ton of good players. They can afford to take, like, all these positions that we're talking about and kind of slow roll them into the NFL. That way, when it is time to rock and roll, they're good to go.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the top 30 visits right now, and it's like I could very easily, just by looking at this, go, okay, if you went Kingsley Suamatea in the first round, you've got a tackle that could be the heir apparent to
I've seen him fall to the 60s in some mock drafts, by the way.
Yeah, maybe he is a second round guy.
Too good to be true. I understand that's too good to be true, but like you never know in the NFL draft.
Right. You've got So, I mean, I can just look at this from their top 30 visits and say, okay, Kingsley in the first round, Andrew Phillips, the nickel corner in the second round. He might start as a freaking rookie. Blake Fisher in the third round. He's now you've got two tackles, one of which that might be able to slide in this year and compete at guard. You know what I mean? Like, it's very easy to look at their visits. They don't even have to take those guys and kind of build
that. Talanoa Hufanga is Talanoa Hufanga. Also, no guarantee that he stays healthy again.
And they just brought in Kalen Bullock. Like, we found out about that like today, right?
Yep.
And he's a guy that they might be able to get in like the third or the fourth. I'm not entirely sure. And so, and then as you get later into the draft, that you get tight ends that may have a very quick path to a significant role as a rookie or as a bona fide tight end two by next year. So I think if I had to like smack a sticker on the bumper of the 49ers, it's like, get guys that have a clear role in this team moving forward, because they don't have a choice. They don't have enough money. Like, they have to get guys that can produce. Otherwise, you're really putting yourself in a rough spot. Like, unfortunately, it's the way it is, but, you know, you're cutting guys like Eric Armstead. And it's just the way it is, but got to find talent. Anything, any other thoughts on this draft? Is there any players we haven't talked about that you're like, hey, this guy, I like this guy?
Let's see.
You don't have to have somebody. I'm just curious if we haven't hit on anybody that you like.
So we talked about him a little bit beforehand. Cooper Beebe, he's a right guard. I think he would start the second he's drafted. He would be an upgrade. You talked about the tight end. Like, I think they brought in Iowa's tight end, Eric All.
Yes, they did.
So he is not your typical Iowa tight end. He's not really a blocker. He's more of like an actual receiver, and he moves very well. Like, he is, I would argue that out, like, after Brock Bowers, he might be the most, you know, physically gifted, just best natural receiver at tight end. So I could see him making an instant impact. I really do like him. Some of the safeties, like, there's the safety out of Texas Tech who, like, the safeties are undersized, but the safety out of Texas Tech is a ball hawk. I think he would be very good. I really like Jalen Simpson from Auburn. But these guys are probably going to go like fifth, sixth round. So, like, they can wait, which is good. Do you think they're going to go? They're going to draft an edge guy?
An edge guy? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all, because they're still looking at, like, I like the Leonard Floyd signing. But they're still looking for a guy that can, like, be a legitimate dude opposite Nick Bosa. And, it, you know, whether it's like a Dorius Robinson who could, he could be an interior and exterior guy. He's kind of like Darius Robinson. Excuse me. I mixed him and Brandon Dorlis up. You know, he could be a guy that kind of does both. He's just a massive dude. Like, he's the most like Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner ish guy in this draft class. Like, 6'5", 300 pounds. Well, not Brandon Dorlis, Darius Robinson.
Oh, okay.
And he has like 10 and something inch hands, you know, like, he is just an absolute freak. You know, like, are there any edge rushers though that I'm like totally head over heels for? You know, like, not even like, they'd have to be really early in the draft to get a guy that I was like, oh shit, you know, like Jared Verse fell and all of a sudden he's there at 20 and the 49ers fly up and get him. Like, that would be some, like, there would be some waves, you know, like, that would be crazy. Just don't think it happens. So
when you brought up Braswell, from Alabama, I didn't see that they met with him. I could see him being much better in the NFL. Just because Alabama's kind of weird, where they asked their edge guys, like Will Anderson last year, to basically be head up on the tackle and to be a run first player, as opposed to, you know, just kind of pin your ears back and go after the quarterback. So he's a much better athlete than he looks, and he tested like one. So I can see him being better at the next level, especially like in a role where he gets the opportunity, assuming the 49ers are playing with the lead. So like that's an interesting one. I haven't watched enough of the Oregon guy, but it seems like everybody has, there's a consensus on him that he's just like the real deal. Like, he's just going to be a productive player.
Brandon Dorlis?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of like a consensus, like, top 50 player. Like, you know, he's He's going to be a super, super solid player. Real freak athlete looking dude. 6'3", 283 pounds, but he doesn't. That would kind of give off the impression of like a defensive, like a bigger defensive lineman's frame. But the dude is just absolutely jacked. You know, he's a freak athlete. I like Brandon Dorlus a lot too. Just looking at where teams have him, he's kind of a top 50 ranked player too. So I think that he could be, I think they're working him out to kind of, I think they're building contingency plans that they really don't like what's available at 31 and a team calls up trying to get a quarterback to give and gives them an offer that it's tough for them to turn down. You know, like if the Raiders don't get a quarterback in the first round and they call the 49ers and they're like, hey, we'll give you our third rounder and we'll give you our second rounder next year. You know, like the 49ers are going to be like, you know, so it's, I think they're trying to kind of create like a wide net based on like early first rounders, early or late first rounders, early second rounders to just kind of, which would be smart if that's what they're doing, just to make sure they've got something to fall back on if they decide to trade back. Because I wouldn't be surprised if they trade back because they'd be able to get a, I mean, you might, if they do their job, you might end up with four quality players that could all start next year, you know, maybe have some action this year.
So one of the reasons that I have them trading up is because according to Over the Cap, like their rookie pool, they don't have enough cap space. It's their rookie pool is going to cost them over $10 million. And as of now, they have like around $6 million. And of course, like by extending players, they can get under the cap and they can afford to pay all the players. But whether they have like 10 or 11 draft picks, I don't know if they're going to use all of them.
Right. Yeah, they could definitely part ways with them. And the 49ers like to move around. They don't have a problem with it. And
oh, it's all they do.
I could definitely see them. The trade up that I could see the 49ers doing is for somebody like an A.D. Mitchell, where they know the Bills are right in front of them, you know, like, and the Bills could use, no matter what stupid shit they say to the media, they could use a receiver badly. And there's a chance that, like we just got done talking about, that a very good one is there for them, I think at 28. And I could see the 49ers jumping up to like 27, 26 if they really liked a receiver just to make sure they get it. I don't know if they're going to do like a swing for the fences move where they come up into like the early 20s, late teens. You know, I'm not sure they can quite, that might be a little too rich for them, but I would not be surprised at all if they traded up because they kind of fall in love with dudes, you know, as most teams do. But it seems like the 49ers fall a little harder.
It seems like there's a lot of trades in the third round that they do as well. So maybe, you know, one of these, like a Javon Baker guy falls to the 80s and they move up and trade in the third round for like their wide receiver.
Yeah. You know what I like about Javon Baker is like, you can have that dude can be blanketed and he will still catch the ball.
And Brock's going to give him a chance too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. He don't care. Brock's a lot more of like a gunslinger than I think a lot of people give him credit for. Right. I know. It's like everything he does is attributed to the talent around him. I'm like, did you see the throw? He just, like, you still have to throw it there. Most quarterbacks don't even have the balls to do that. All right. The other day I'm driving home and I'm like, the Brock Purdy story is still difficult to believe for me at times. I'm just like the way the whole thing is unfolded. It would have been cool if they won the Super Bowl, but it's, to me, it's not necessarily what defines it, but like, it's just wild that the 49ers have,
freak out about his contract.
I know. And it's not that complicated. Like, dude, if he's playing like a great quarterback, you got to pay him like a great quarterback. That's it, man. Sorry. Like, you can try and haggle over $5 million if you want, but he's going to get paid a lot of money.
Inevitable.
Or you can take your ass back to the teams that need a quarterback. Don't pay him then. Like, where would you rather be? Short on money or short on a quarterback?
Right.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, man. People get weird. All right, dude. I think we talked enough. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this just hodgepodge of NFL draft prospect talk. We kept it sort of organized, but you know, I just knew I wanted KP to get on here so we could just talk about random prospects. And
organization is overrated.
Yeah, he is. 100%. 100%. So, I mean, Oh man. All right. So let's end with, you always liked, whenever I had you on the pod, you always made me predict the score and who would win. And who do you, I mean, if predict the first pick, man, who do the 49ers take? If you don't want to pick a who, you could always fall back on a position, but I think you're more of a who guy.
With everything that we talked about, and I know Brandon, are you the center of attention, but we should be focused on Debo and Jennings. So with that in mind, I think two wide receivers feels inevitable. And then you have the Texas connection, A.D. Mitchell, who just like fits their style. Like if you watch Ayuk at Arizona State, you can see why this team would be attracted to Mitchell, because he can do the same things as Ayuk was doing. If not,
okay. So A.D. Mitchell is your pick?
Yeah, I'll go there. I would say two wide receivers, but and maybe it's just me like falling for a player and say, hey, if you don't do this, you're dumb. But like I could see Shanahan really falling for like his style of play and like his traits and like what he's able to do with the football. Like he makes some spectacular plays down the field. And this is an explosive offense. This is, we just talk about the quarterback giving his wide receivers a chance. Like if he throws the ball to Mitchell, he's gonna come down with it. So I'll go Mitchell and two wide receivers is my projection.
In total.
I would say, and I could even go double wide receiver, double O-line. What do you think?
I'm going to go, I mean, obviously we just talked about it. I could easily see them going with a wide receiver round one. I think they either go receiver. It's weird and it could totally not be the case, but I see like receiver, offensive tackle as their first two picks, and you could flip them however you want to flip them. I'm going to go Kingsley Sumatea. He came to me. He's the only pick from offensive tackle that is likely to make it to 31. I'll just say that timidly. Out of everybody, that's he's the likeliest one to make it at 31. That still like encourages me. Like,
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like this guy could not only beat out Colton McKivitz right now, but he could truly develop. If I'm not wrong, I think he has experience on both sides of the line.
He does.
And this guy could be coming away with a Trent Williams heir apparent at 31. He's the only offensive lineman. There's a couple late round ones, but I'm kind of sticking with him because not late, but second, third rounders that could do that too. But he's the one they brought in on top 30 visit. I'm going to go with him. And, I think that, and if they said his name, I'd be like, all right, I see what you're doing here. I get it. And then I'd be sorry that they didn't get A.D. Mitchell.
If he goes to the Chiefs, man.
A.D. Mitchell. That's another, I forgot to mention that. That's another reason that the 49ers just might want to be a little, plug your children's ears, just be a little, some little fuckers. You know, they know that the Chiefs, there's a 90% chance that they're going to select a receiver right after them. And the 49ers are already going to be salty as hell that they essentially handed the Chiefs another Super Bowl that they should have won. And it would not surprise me at all if punk ass Kyle Shanahan was like, nope, I'm going
to
take
not
this
again.
One.
So if he goes to the Chiefs, 100 receptions, 1500 yards, 15 times, like just pencil in whatever number you want, because it's going to happen. I would not take, obviously you want to add for all the reasons that we said, you know, you want Ayuk and Mitchell to be the duo moving forward, but there has to be some of that, right? Like you can't ignore the team picking after you. Who is
you're picking 31. Yeah. There's no way you can ignore the team picking after you.
Not after what they've done.
I know. That would be so funny, man. And I think the Chiefs, no matter what, like we said, this receiver class is fucking crazy. So no matter what, even if the 49ers did go receiver, the one that the Chiefs could take after the 49ers can still be good and could still get a ridiculous amount of production. But that, to me, gives the 49ers just a little more incentive. Like, they might be torn between two positions, and they're like, what do they think the Chiefs going to do? All right, we'll take a receiver. Like, I could see it. Kyle Shanahan, I could see it written in the stars. That's just who he is. It's who he is. Any other takes there, KP?
No, man. I think we hit on most of the positions that were that the 49ers are probably going to hit on. I don't think anything would really surprise me either. So It should be fun. I expect them to maneuver around quite a bit just because that's what it seems like they've done every year.
Yeah. Maybe I'll dial you up again. Maybe after the draft, we can talk about how much they fucked it up and talk about
if Mitchell goes to the Chiefs, I will be on here.
Yeah. And talk about where everybody fits into the equation. And hopefully we're talking about prospects that have a clear path towards starting role. All right, man. I love you, bro. Appreciate you for hopping on.
Always, man.
Anytime. I'll pencil you in for after the draft. Actually, I will pen you in for after the draft. Pencils for pussies. So I'll make sure it's on there. Everybody, KP, you can follow him at KP Show.
I think so.
Sorry, that's a loud laugh. I apologize, everybody. But it was funny because me and KP before the podcast, he was just talking about how it's so hard for him to get on Twitter nowadays. Like, it's just such a stupid place now. And you've got people just making up Brandon Ayuk rumors. KP_show. Okay, I was right. He writes for Niners Nation. He does an excellent job at it. He churns out content like crazy. He's broken down the top offensive tackles, the top interior offensive linemen, and the top receivers. Are you going to do any more of those before the draft?
I think I'm actually just going to put together like a big board, try to stack the players just because, again, like the players that we're talking about, like O-line, receiver, like that's where it seems like. So,
yeah. So make sure you are over at Niners Nation supporting KP's work. Obviously he's got a passion for these prospects. And I've appreciated having you on, bro. Thank you very much. Again, make sure you guys go follow KP and him, the work that he does. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for lending me and KP an hour and 20 minutes of your time. Even if you did like 1.25 or 1.5 times, and it's like 45 minutes, it's still just as valuable. I appreciate it. If you want to leave us a little bit more support, go to whatever app you're listening to, leave us a 5-star review, put in some words if you want to. But in the end, the ultimate form of support is you being here and listening. PrizePicks.com/gold. Do that. Another way of supporting the pod. For another episode, that's KP. I'm Rob. This is Striking Gold. Signing out.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.